America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hi, yes. Thank you, Paul. And thanks to everybody for being along with us this afternoon here with the Guy James Show. We've got a good show planned for you today. Lots of talk on some subjects I know you're going to want to hear about, some subjects I know you are very interested in. And you being the most, well, the most educated and up-to-date audience in all of talk radio, you will be interested in what we have to say today. I am constantly amazed by the email that I get and the correspondence and the letters and so forth that I get from my audience of what an astute group of people that we really have out there. People with PhDs, professors from around the world, people in Europe, people here in this country. I'm amazed, and I do thank you for all of you taking time to sit down and write a short note. Even Ed Pierce, for example, out in Salt Lake City, Utah, sent me a nice note this week talking about the difficulties of buying a home in Salt Lake City, it being so very, very expensive. And sent along a picture of just a beautiful family, beautiful wife and two cute kids and himself. And it was really great to see that. I love to have this kind of correspondence with my audience. I'm not one of these standoffish people that, you know, comes in and does the show every day and doesn't want to know anything about any of you. I do want to know. And also, our dear friend up in Vermont, Eric, I tell you, Eric he's something else. We got the other day a half gallon of Vermont's very finest, pure, world's best maple syrup in the mail. I tell you, Eric, thank you so very much. I know you didn't even want me to mention that. I know that. I know Eric, and I know he needs. Just so if Eric's not listening, and the rest of you heard that, don't tell him that we mentioned it. But my God, we got a half gallon of pure maple syrup. Being a country boy myself, and having even helped in the production of maple syrup many, many years ago, I appreciate that. I most certainly do. I'm not sitting here pandering for gifts from people, but I do want you to know I appreciate hearing from you, and. Most of all, I appreciate listening to the program today. We've got a lot to talk about. Don't know where to start today, really. We've got the new guy from... Where are we going with the new guy from Goldman Sachs, head of the Treasury? I just don't know what's up with that. They paid him... Well, Goldman Sachs paid $40 million bucks in fines over the past few years for mishandling government contracts. And then Paulson, their leader, ends up as the head of the Treasury Department. And he's an environmentalist. And here we've got right-wing groups after his scalp already. And on the other hand, we've got the big banking groups saying, oh, yes, we want him. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Is this some kind of a – I don't know. A white flag from the Bush administration toward everybody else. Here, I've given you an environmentalist in my administration. Never mind that he's a big business banker. He is an environmentalist. I don't know. I don't know where they're going on this. What else did we have down on our list to talk about today? Heard Chuck Hagel say the other day that things are worse now than they were 3 years ago. Don't forget, this is a Republican saying this. Worse now than they were 3 years ago. And don't forget, and when we hear all about these killings and so forth in Iraq, don't forget the letters that we've been getting from soldiers in Iraq telling us about this very thing, about troops and private security guards shooting at Iraqis just for fun. Don't forget that. And, of course, we've got this big flap about Carl Zinnmeister, Bush's new policy expert. God. And we're also going to mention Jeb Bush's letter. You'll want to hear Jeb Bush's letter, if you haven't, to the Swift Boat Boys. It's touching. It's touching that Jeb Bush would write a letter thanking the Swift Boaters on State of Florida stationery. And it looks like old Ricky Santorum, one of our very favorites, is down by 23 points to Casey out in Pennsylvania. And that is very good news. No one I'd rather see leave the Senate than Rick Santorum. Of course, Joe Lieberman would be right behind him. You know what I'm talking about. A lot in the news today, and I know you've been all over this, and the news, thankfully, has been all over it. Now the U.S. military says two Iraqi women have been shot to death in Baghdad. The U.S. military says two Iraqi women have been shot to death in a city north of Baghdad after coalition forces fired at a car that failed to stop at an observation point. The statement came after Iraqi police said a pregnant woman and her cousin were killed by American troops as they were driving to a maternity hospital in Samarra, a predominantly Sunni city 60 miles north of Baghdad. God. A statement called the deaths regrettable and said that coalition forces go to great lengths to prevent them. I guess they fired warning shots and they didn't stop. They were on their way to the maternity hospital. Pregnant woman. My God. My God. And, of course, George Bush, President George Bush on Wednesday said that if an investigation turns up evidence of wrongdoing by U.S. Marines and the killings of civilians in the Iraqi town of Haditha, there will be punishment. Oh, really? Like there was punishment in the Plame case? If you saw any leakers in Washington like that? Like the Abu Ghraib punishment? A couple of lackeys end up taking the fall for everybody? Sure, George. Sure, we believe that. And then we run across this unbelievable story that the new Iraqi ambassador to America, fresh after meeting Bush in Washington for the first time, told CNN, this is just incredible, the new Iraqi ambassador to America, right after he met Bush, told CNN that U.S. Marines killed his cousin in cold blood during the Haditha massacre in November. Where does this end? I mean, the new ambassador's cousin has been killed, and he meets with Bush. What the hell did he say to Bush, I wonder? I wonder, did he demand an explanation for him, or did he just kiss ass? I wonder. Really makes you wonder. And that brings me to the subject I really wanted to talk about in the first hour of this program today. And I hope you don't mind. And I hope you don't mind my attitude about this today. But I've been in a rotten mood ever since reading this in the news. And I've been keeping close track of the story. I've been working a lot lately on advanced studies of the Middle East and the attitudes and the history of the area. And I'm beginning to understand it more and more and more all the time. And I think it's my opinion, and you can take it for what it's worth. It's worth a lot to me. I think we've lost our way. And that old phrase came up again this week that I've heard over and over again, and it just lit my fuse, and I just feel that I have to talk about it today, and I know you've heard it again, and aiding and abetting the enemy. Remember how they love to throw that one around every time anyone opposite their side said anything negative about the Bush War when it first started? Remember that even as recently as the first of this year when they were on this, you remember this kick? You guys don't report anything good about what we've done in Iraq kick. You remember that? They were all singing their song in unison. They were even rotating about a half a dozen or so soldiers around on the cable news, telling the press what was going on. And, you know, they were going out of their way to report all the great things that were happening in Iraq and saying that the press was ignoring the good news. And by doing this, we were aiding and abetting the enemy. Those words came up again because the insurgents were hearing the news about how disenchanted the American people had become over the Bush War. And now they would just wait us out, and therefore we were traitors because we were helping the enemy win the war. You remember that one? You've heard that how many times? Are you tired of it as I am? Remember that? And a half dozen or so other PR campaigns the White House has directed since the start of the Bush War, always saying those of us who objected to Bush taking us into that awful quagmire were seditious and treasonous and every other goddamn name they could call us. Do you remember all that? I certainly do. They tried to shut us up, and they did shut up many of the Democratic politicians. Isn't that right, Hillary? Over and over, they tried to shut us up. But we would not be silenced because we knew we had the truth on our side. No matter what they would say about us, we knew that we were speaking the absolute unadulterated truth. We knew it. And when Abu Ghraib came to light, our reporting it and discussing it was more treason and sedition in their minds. Oh, it was only a few college prank type incidents and was being blown all out of proportion. And so by doing so, once again, we were aiding and abetting the enemy. And as it turns out, in Abu Ghraib, what was actually reported wasn't even the tip of the iceberg in that place. We still haven't heard the truth about that place and the horrors that happened there. Those college pranks. Oh, sure, they prosecuted a couple of low-level idiots who were stupid enough to take the rap and not say much, but the real culprits, the commanders, and up the chain of command, up to the higher-ups that knew this sort of torture was taking place and turned their heads and gave a wink and a nod to it, totally evaded any type of punishment whatsoever. And when the Iraqi public found out about it, the insurgency grew once again. Who were the traitors and the seditionists in that? And now we're seeing yet another attempt on the part of this administration to sweep a total horror under the rug and say it's being blown out of all proportion by opponents of Junior Bush. What bullshit. Have you noticed there are Marines being interviewed on radio and TV who are saying that what happened was justified and that the soldiers should not be held accountable for it because they were just defending themselves? More bullshit. And of course, we who vehemently object to any kind of action like this by American troops, we are once again helping the enemy because without us talking about it, the Iraqi public wouldn't know about it, and there would be no trouble. Sure. The Marines were right in doing what they did, and we are wrong in talking about it. That's the message they're trying to send once again. Well, I have had it. I've reached the breaking point on this. I've listened to that crap coming from the right-wing media long enough. I've listened to Bush apologists explain away one horror after another, and I've just had it. The Hannitys and the Limbaughs have defended these awful incidents. And that alone should tell you just enough about those people's credibility. When a large portion, and I'm talking about 29%, that is a large portion of American citizens, when they can look at what happened at Haditha and try and explain it away the way they've been doing, then it's time to declare war on these people. They have crossed the line of human decency that's been drawn in the sand. They're showing the entire world that the United States of America has become morally bankrupt and has developed a thirst for the blood of anyone not American. They can see that a significant number of Americans, the 29%, do not value the lives of anyone but their own kind. American lives are precious. The rest of you are dirt in our eyes. That's the attitude the world sees. And if anything would ever help an enemy continue to resist our military efforts, this is it. I swear to you that if I were an Iraqi, a born and raised Iraqi who had up till now resisted the temptation to defend my country against the American occupation, I would now join those who were fighting against us. And who could blame them? This latest abomination to human decency is but one more episode in this American tragedy called the Bush administration. And it's now obvious to any casual observer that a major cover-up has taken place. And you know that if the military has taken steps to cover up this whole matter for 6 months, that it must have reached the highest levels of government. And of course, they're saying Bush didn't know anything about it until he heard it on the news. Sure. And they didn't leak anything out of the White House. Oh, sure. You know, this administration is going to give out the story of a few bad apples committing this crime against humanity, but it goes a lot deeper than that. And this is the part I want you to think about. There are many soldiers in Iraq that are there for the second, the third, and the fourth time. This war has now lasted nearly as long as World War II with no end in sight. Our soldiers have been bloodied, they've been bullied, and they've been misused by our government. And some of them, many of them, have had to go way beyond human endurance to satisfy their commander-in-chief. Many of them are psychologically broken and bowed. We know that many of them are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. We know this. On this program, we know this from a soldier who sent us a letter very recently telling us that Valium is the opiate of this army. They're passing it out like candy to make it bearable for these guys. There are hundreds, perhaps thousands of them on the edge. What has been asked of these young men and women is totally unreasonable, and it is irresponsible of the Bush administration to expect even more from them, even another day. When things happen like this tragedy at Haditha, it's usually because someone snapped. Someone who shouldn't have been in uniform in Iraq. It's usually someone whom the guys in their outfit knew was going to snap. Our young men and women are not over there to be murderers, but some of them are becoming just that because they've been driven beyond all human endurance by a president consumed with his own legacy, and that's all that matters to him. By a president and a Defense Department chief that have no conception of the human tragedy that is the Bush War. They have no conception of the suffering on the Iraqi side, and they've given every indication that they just don't give a damn about the suffering of our soldiers and their families either. Once again, we have all the proof needed that our military is at the breaking point. We are being told that we're taking positive steps in Iraq by training an Iraqi army and an Iraqi police force, both of which will step up and take control of their own land, and that is a fallacy. We have been told dozens of times that we've trained 100,000, no, 40,000, well, maybe 5,000, no, now it's 250,000 Iraqis. We're training them well, and they're taking over so we can stand down. And after all of that crap that we hear from the commanders in the field in Iraq, and then passed on through Rumsfeld, who I can't stomach the sight of anymore, and then when Bush stands up and says it, then we find we have deployed 1,500 more U.S. troops into southern Iraq where new violence has broken out. You tell me something. If 150,000 American troops and the 250,000 Iraqi troops we're now being told are trained and battle-ready, if that number of battle-ready troops can't put down a ragtag insurgency, just what the hell good is 1,500 more Americans going to do? I will freely admit I'm no military strategist, but I have a brain, and it tells me there's something terribly wrong with the story we're being told by this lying, obviously psychopathic administration. We're being fed a line of bull that is just too much to digest. We're being lied to every single day about almost every single event taking place in Iraq, all to save the legacy of George W. Bush, a man who, if justice was going to be served, would sooner or later be in a cell in The Hague standing trial for war crimes against humanity. For through his lies and deceit to start the Bush War, he has committed crimes against the United States of America and the sovereign nation of Iraq. There have been tens of thousands of innocents killed, including 2,500 of our own young men and women, along with another 15,000 who are so maimed for life, and untold others who are psychologically scarred for life. Mr. Bush can blame whomever he likes, but I know, and you know, that it is no different than if he had pulled the trigger on each one of the victims himself. Therefore, I am calling for the immediate resignation of President George W. Bush, Vice President Richard Cheney, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, and all of their aides and advisors. And if the American public does not rise up and demand the removal of office of these people, then this once proud nation, which has lost its way, does not deserve the blessings of Almighty God upon her. It is just that simple. I don't want to seem over melodramatic about it, but there comes a time when it's too much. There comes a time when you see the good name of your country, whom you've been born in, that you've loved all your life. You see the reputation of that nation being flushed down the drain by an administration that is so incompetent and corrupt. So incompetent and corrupt that there are not enough words to describe the degrees of incompetence and corruptness that these people have. I have no words in my vocabulary, none, to tell you of my contempt for these people. Every single day, I cannot stand the sight of them. I cannot stand to see them on TV. I refuse to listen to Junior Bush talk anymore. It is an embarrassment to this great nation, one of the greatest nations, probably the greatest nation that's ever come to pass on this planet. And what is happening to us right now is criminal. It's absolutely criminal. I don't know how we can be letting this happen. I swear I don't know how we could be letting this happen. It's the saddest thing. It's just the saddest thing. We go through 9/11. We go through the Oklahoma bombing. Horrible events in the history of this nation. Pearl Harbor. Another horrible event in the history of this nation. And here we sit. Here we sit, allowing these criminals to run our government. To do the things they're doing. I have no words. I just run out of them when I start talking about these people. I really do. And I know many of you feel the same way. I hear from you. I know how you feel. And I know a great percentage of the people in the United States of America feel exactly the same way as I do today about this. I know many of you have seen the reports of the women and the children who were slaughtered. Slaughtered by soldiers who have snapped because they've had too much. They've had enough. They were sent over the edge. Sent over the edge by being given duty that they never should have been given in the first place. In the most difficult of conditions. Against an enemy that for all intents and purposes didn't even exist in Iraq. We send an army in to do the actions of what should have been a covert mission by some Green Berets or Navy SEALs to wipe out a cell here or there or whatever. We send an army in to do that. Send a sledgehammer in to kill a fly. And look at what's happened. Look at the results. 2,500 of our people killed. Tens of thousands of their people killed. Have you seen the faces of the beautiful children? The beautiful Iraqi children? Have you seen the pictures? Of the surviving kids who witnessed the horrible murders of their families? Have you seen the looks on their faces? How can we do this? How can we continue on with this? We're a better nation than this. I've talked enough. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I hope you'll give us a call. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
President stood in front of the jet planes. The rebels all settled and democracy reigns. We defeated their army, taken control. Dropped thousands of bombs and they've taken their toll. The oil's on fire, just like the blood of a billion Muslims dragged through the mud. And the world is safer with the dictator gone. And their lot will improve with our corporate pawn. The war is over. That's what he said, go back to your business. We've buried the dead and the war is over. Father, fatherless children have taken the street. All that remains is the sting of defeat. Homes are in ruins, cancer is rife. For soldiers and newborns, the end of a life. Kids grown up with just hunger and fear. But lo, behold, the Yankees are here. Now you people are gonna be free. Cause this land was made for Chevron and me. And the war is over. That's what he said, just turn on your TV. We've buried the dead and the war is over. The government files are all up in flames. His victims of torture, who remembers their names? The past doesn't matter, but the future is bright. As the Exxon refinery lights up the night. History's looted like the library's shelves, but we'll fill them with Bibles, be proud of ourselves. Turn your schools into compounds, make room for us all. If you're missing your legs, you can learn how to crawl. The war is over. That's what he said, forget it all happened. We've buried the dead and the war is over. And the price was worth it, yeah, we'd do it again. With bombs or with sanctions, kids, women, and men. Cause we have national interests and they must be met. We will enforce them by treaty or jet. And when time has passed and we've had some rest, we'll find a new villain, cause that's what we do best. Maybe a sultan or a grandson of Mao, but don't trouble your conscience, because as of now, the war is over. That's what he said, just put it behind you. We've buried the dead and the war is over.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
And we're back with the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. So glad to have all of you along with us. And we see we've got a nice, healthy audience out there today. Always good to know that. Try to compose myself during the break. I know I get emotional about things. These are emotional times. And if you have no emotions about issues that are taking place in this world and issues like Haditha and things like that, then I don't want to know you. It's that simple. If you can look at a situation like that and just turn your head and walk away from it and not think anything about it, you're not somebody that I would be friends with. I'd just be up front and close and honest with you about it, okay? Just want you to know. That's how it is with me. As you probably have figured out about me over the years, those of you that have been with us ever since we started the show, nearly 4 years ago, there's not a lot of gray in my life. It's black or it's white, and I'm not kind of a gray kind of guy, although I do have some gray clothes. But we don't usually sit on the fence on issues. Now and then one comes along, but not too often. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call. Let us know your feelings about what's going on about this program or anything in the world. Let's go to the phones right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, Guy.
Yes.
I must admit, your opening oration was quite moving, and I don't think I've heard anything equally as moving since I've read the words of Chief Justice Robert Jackson when he opened the Nuremberg War Trial, when he basically said that we cannot afford to ignore these mistakes because they cannot be repeated.
That's right.
Unfortunately, they have been.
They have been.
In this country, Mr. Bush and his cronies not only have subjected another country to their iron will, but they're doing the same thing here within our borders with the imposition or the super imposition of ad hoc law. And, you know, this reminds me, this whole thing reminds me of a reconvening of the Wannsee Conference of 20 January of 1942. Remember that?
Well, I'm vaguely familiar.
It's basically when Heydrich and Eichmann and 13 other ministers and commanders were called from their ministries and commands to decide the fate of the Jews in the occupied territories of the Third Reich. It's the same type of mentality. It's living again.
Yes, it is. It is. It's as though, and you know the bad part about it is, Jim, I see other Americans going along with it, that American lives are valuable, but the people with brown skin or whatever, that's just collateral damage. And I just don't think the good Lord ever wanted it to be that way. I really don't.
Well, in quick summation here, I've worn the uniform and I've been a teacher and an educator, and I've also been a federal civil servant with DOD. And right now, tears are coming in my eyes.
Well, it's
and the very stones.
Yep.
Cry out for justice.
Yep. They do. And thank you for your call. I can't stand it. I don't know about you, but I'm to the point where I'm just so exasperated. I don't know what to do. I have to go to Washington for several days in mid-June to cover this Take Back America conference, and I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see me in front of the White House with a big sign. I can't take it anymore. I really can't. You know, it's one of those deals where you really do feel like opening up the window and saying I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. I mean, there needs to be a million of us march on that town. I mean, that's what has to happen. And here we sit. Let's go back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
I'm Alice from Humboldt.
Hi, Alice.
And I go along with you. We should all go in a march to Washington, D.C.
That's what it's going to have to be.
What I called about is I still think many Americans don't know how really bad they are. Our press doesn't tell us. We get the message out better than anyone, and we love you for it.
Well, thank you, Alice. We try to deal in nothing but truth on this show.
I know you feel defeated, but just don't.
Well, I...
That's what they want.
Yeah, it is what they want. It is what they want.
They don't want those voting machines, too.
They sure do.
Yeah.
They sure do. They certainly do.
Well, you just have faith.
Oh, I will.
It's awful hard, I know. But
it is at times, but we're going to have faith that we, the people, take this back from this awful group that has control right now. We will take it back.
Yeah. I go along with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alice. Good to hear from you. You want to know the mindset of these people? Really? You want to know the mindset? You want to know what kind of people we're dealing with? Those who are still the Bush lovers, the 29. I still don't think it's really 29. I think about half of those are just people too stubborn to say it, that they know it, but they won't say it, but whatever number it happens to be. I wonder if you look at it differently, what I'm about to tell you, than I do. You must, obviously. You probably think this is cute, what I'm about to tell you. I'll bet you do. I don't. You Bush lovers. Ladies Home Journal. Peggy Noonan, the interviewer. Peggy Noonan. I won't say anything more about that. There's a woman. Yeah, I will. There's a woman right there that probably had to have her lips surgically removed from Ronald Reagan's rear end right there, Peggy Noonan. She's talking to the Bushes in an interview in Ladies Home Journal. And I don't know how long ago this interview took place, but I can just imagine Peggy sitting there and asking the Reagans, or the Bushes, see, I said it. Boy, you talk about a Freudian slip. Oh, she's sitting there talking so nicely, as she does. You know, she wrote speeches for President Reagan. And she's talking to the Bushes, Laura and George. And it says, you were separated on September 11th. What was it like when you saw each other again? You all remember why they were separated. George was on an airplane flying around the country, scared as hell, afraid to fly back to Washington, was in a bunker where, in Nebraska and someplace else first, I don't know where. That's why they were separated. Because the man didn't have the guts to fly back to Washington. They blame it on the Secret Service. You telling me that the Commander-in-Chief of the United States couldn't have told the pilot of Air Force One, take me to Washington? The Commander-in-Chief couldn't have done that? Overridden any orders that were given to him? Yeah, right. Well, anyway, let's go back to the interview. Forgive me today. I'm in a mood. Laura Bush says, well, we just hugged, and I think there was a certain amount of security in being with each other than being apart. Well, now, you know, that's no different than most people who had been separated across this country when the husband or wife came home, when the couple got together, they all gave each other a big hug that day and understood that a horrible tragedy had befallen this country. There were tears in the eyes of almost every American that day. And so Peggy's asking the Bushes, you know, what was it like when you saw each other? And Laura gave her answer. And George Bush said, but the day ended on a relatively humorous note. The agent said, you'll be sleeping downstairs. Washington's still a dangerous place. And I said, no, I can't sleep down there. The bed didn't look comfortable. I was really tired, and Laura was tired, and we like our own bed, so, and we like our own routine, you know, kind of a nester. I knew I had to deal with the issue the next day and provide strength and comfort to the country. Excuse me a minute. Jesus, people can only take so much of this. Provide strength and comfort to the country, so I needed rest in order to be mentally prepared. God, mentally prepared. George Bush, that is funny. Mentally prepared. All right. So I told the agents we were going upstairs, and he reluctantly said okay. Laura wears contacts, and she was sound asleep. Barney was there. I guess that's the dog. Barney was there, and the agent comes running up and says, we're under attack. We need you downstairs. And so there we go. I'm in my running shorts and my T-shirt, and I'm barefooted. Got the dog in one hand. Laura had a cat. I'm holding Laura. And Laura says, I don't have my contacts in, and I'm in my fuzzy house slippers. And George says, and this guy's out of breath, and we're heading straight down to the basement because there's an incoming unidentified airplane which is coming toward the White House, and the guy says, finally, it's a friendly airplane. And we hustle all the way back upstairs and go to bed. And Mrs. Bush said, and we just lay there thinking about the way we must have looked. And Peggy Noonan said, so the day starts in tragedy and ends in Marx Brothers. And Mr. Bush said, that's right, we got a laugh out of it. I'm glad the President of the United States got a big laugh out of something that happened on 9/11. Big laugh out of it. Big laugh out of it. Somebody sent me this. And I thought I'd want to read it to you. Maybe you've seen it. I did notice something here on the bottom. It's a letter from from Jeb Bush. And it does say, I think, in letters at the bottom, not paid for by the state of Florida. I think that's what it says. So evidently this is a stationery that the Jebster has printed up to use for private conversations with people, but it still has the seal of the state of Florida and his name, the governor of the state of Florida, on it, Jeb Bush, underneath the seal of the state of Florida. And this is in January 19th of 2005. And I just wanted to read you this letter so that you would know what kind of people we are dealing with. Doesn't matter where you go in the Bush family, you need to know what kind of people you're dealing with. It doesn't matter which one it is. You can say the same about every single one of them, evidently. This letter is to Colonel George E. Day, Day and Mead, PA Attorney at Law. Dear Colonel Day, this is from the Jebster. Thank you for your personal support of my brother in his reelection. I look forward to joining him in Washington for his inauguration. I'm so proud of the president and his reelection campaign. He offered a clear vision for the future of our country. Colonel Day, I know you will be joining other Swifties and POWs in Orlando soon. Please let them know that I am personally appreciative of their service to our nation. As someone who truly understands the risk of standing up for something, I simply cannot express in words how much I value their willingness to stand up against John Kerry. The Swifties. Jeb Bush writing a letter to this colonel thanking him and the Swifties for their service to his brother against John Kerry. And the Jebster goes on to say, their efforts, like their service to their country, speak volumes of what matters most. Jeb, I should say it does. I should say it does. Did you know that the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth recently donated $100,000 to an organization hell-bent upon destroying the reputation of Al Gore's new movie on the environment? Did you know that? Did you know that these bastards have no limits to what they would do to destroy the Democratic Party and anybody that doesn't agree with the Bush family? Did you know that about them? And did you know that Jeb Bush personally wanted to thank them for their stand against John Kerry, these Swift Boat Veterans for Truth? And this is a man, the governor of the state of Florida. I am ashamed that he's the governor of the state of Florida. This is a man being mentioned someday by the Republicans as a possible candidate for president of the United States. They've seen what happens with Bush 1. They've seen what happens with Junior Bush. And they would, honest to God, consider the third one to run for the presidency of the United States? Let me ask you, after all that's come to pass in Bush 1 and Bush 2's tenure, what the hell would be wrong with you to vote for another one? You'd have to be one of those people to get knocked in the head and just come back for another one because the first two felt so good. I mean, there's something wrong with you. There is something wrong with you if you would even consider voting for another Bush for the president of the United States or any office for that matter. And you know, you have to know that had things been going okay for Junior Bush, that without question, without any question, The plan was to have the Jebster move in right behind him. But because of the filth emanating off of George Bush Jr., I guess he's not really Jr., but he is a Junior Bush. Because of the filth emanating from this administration, the time's just not right for the Jebster right now. But he knows that a lot of Americans, the stupid ones, have real short memories. And so he'll sit this one out, probably, and wait for the next time around. But, oh, he will be there. You know his eye is on the prize. You know it is. I have read comments about when George Herbert Walker Bush was a younger man and had these three sons and was talking about the Kennedy family and told his friends, "You wait till I unleash the Bush boys on America." Well, George, you didn't do us any favors. And it is said that Georgie Jr. is a chip off the old block. Babs. It is said that in that family household, that Junior Bush and his beloved mother, Barbara Bush, the one we all have come to know and love as well, would get in such battles between the two of them and call each other such names, mother and son, that the father would leave the room in disgust. Because he could not stand the war of words going on between mother and son. Yeah, I'd have liked to have been around that family. Not. And speaking of families, let's just keep the impetus on family stories here right now. I thought this one touched my heart. We have always been so proud in this country that the American government, back through time, several Republican and Democratic administrations, were great supporters of the Shah of Iran. A wonderful, benevolent, kind human being. That was the perception that the world had of this man. But behind the scenes, there was no worse despot than the Shah of Iran. But he dressed in those pretty little white suits and had all those medals and had the beautiful wife. Was she American? I don't remember or not. She was not Iranian, I know that. But he lived in a lifestyle fit for a king. Really, he was a king. And finally, the secularists took over that country and booted his ass out right where he deserved to go. And now his son... The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Reza Pahlavi, 45, the eldest son of the late Mohammad Reza Pahlavi, the Shah of Iran, said Iranians are ready to actively oppose the Islamic regime of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. So here we have the Shah's son, his father being a lackey for the American government, put in office by the American government, hate the American government today because the Shah of Iran. We have the boy coming forth right now and exhorting the Bush administration to probably put him and his friends in power, right? That'll be real popular over there, I can guarantee you. Yes, sir. Even the modernist in Iran right now aren't going to go for that one. No. They were thrown out in 1979. I can guarantee you the people, the modernist, anybody in Iran doesn't want to see this boy come back into that country. They don't want to see any of the DNA of the Shah come walking across the borders of Iran, and who could blame them? It was a brutal, brutal tyrant. Just was very successful in manipulating the press in his country, and the press, the American government was successful in manipulating the press in our country and keeping quiet the atrocities that took place under the Shah of Iran toward the enemies, quote, enemies of the state. in Iran. I thought you would enjoy hearing about this. Got this letter. Called and asked a guy if he or didn't call. I wrote him and asked him if he didn't mind. I read it. It's on Democratic Underground, and I thought you might like a little levity on the program today. And it's by Flamin' Lib on Democratic Underground. He wrote this about, 4:30 on Tuesday, I guess it was. He said, had a talk with my next-door neighbor. The feller's heart is in the right place, but his head is up his ass. He's a born-again Baptist, Southern variety, and just loves him some W because he's such a good Christian man. He asked me how things are. I says my business sucks. I'm in real estate, and the foreclosures is up 38% while disposable income is down, and everybody's worried about their jobs. However, I says, I have it on good authority that the economy is strong and getting stronger. My president said so. So he comes back and says, we got us 5 million new jobs. Well, I says, that's cause Bush changed the way we measure employment. And if you was to use the same rules as everybody else from 1945 to 2004, we lost 2 million jobs. Well, he says that I have time to look up such stuff, and he doesn't. He's retired, you know. Besides, he says, we're being kept safe because we're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them here. And I looks at him like he's got horns. Says, do you really think all them terrorists Bush says he's spying on here is all going to move back to Iraq? He says, no, don't guess so. So I says, then how the hell do you figure we're fighting them there to keep them away from here, being as they're already here? He gets this funny look on his face and sort of wanders off back to the house. So I'm telling my wife all this, and she says, hon, you got to stop abating that poor fool. You ain't going to change his mind. Besides, he's your neighbor, and it tain't nice. I says, wait a minute. He's retired from the state and his doctrine is all paid for by my tax dollars and has the damn nerve to stand in my yard and tell me he don't want his money to pay for everybody else's insurance because they're too lazy to go to work while my kid is working two jobs with no benefits and has a positive pap smear. I has to take a breath after that, and she says, he's just ignorant, and I ought to let him be. Then I says, he's got the almighty gall to stand on my property and tell me the atheist is a-stealing his rights and won't to take his Bible away. Well, I'm atheist myself, and I never once wanted his Bible and told him so. I tells her I'm damn tired of making nice, and I ain't going to do it no more. I ain't no bleeding heart liberal. I'm a flaming, angry, mad as hell liberal, and I just ain't going to be quiet no more. She says, yes, dear, and goes back to sipping her tea and petting the cat. I like that. I'm glad there are people in this world that still have a sense of humor over the whole thing. I try to. We do little satirical pieces on this program now and then, like the one we did the other day about the borders. Had a couple people wrote me some awful things about that that didn't understand that it was satire. Oh, some awful things. And I wrote back and said, well, I don't think you understood. We were making fun of the righties, the way they were writing these nasty letters, saying they wrote back and went, oh. So that's how it was. When we come back from the news at the top of the hour, I know some of you who read the newspaper who still are bold enough to pick up the paper and read it in the morning probably read an article by Jonah Goldberg. Jonah Goldberg, son of Lucianne Goldberg. And he made some comments about Al Gore. It's starting. Oh, yes, it is starting. The war on Al Gore. They're lighting the fuse already. And we're going to talk about it when we come back after the news at the top of the hour. I think you'll find it interesting. I certainly found it interesting, some of the things he had said, and to see that they're starting this little ruse of theirs all over again. And given my respect for Jonah Goldberg and his mother, Lucianne Goldberg, I think you'll find it interesting what we might have to say about it. So stay tuned. We're going to stop for news at the bottom of the hour. At the top of the hour, actually. And we're going to be back. You're listening to The Guy James Show. Don't go anywhere at all. If you do, we'll come looking for you.
This is Quality News Network. In a shift in U.S. policy, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice has announced that the United States will engage in multilateral talks with Iran regarding its nuclear ambitions if Tehran agrees to suspend uranium enrichment. That move comes as senior officials from major powers prepare to meet in Vienna tomorrow to approve incentives for Iran not to pursue nuclear know-how with arms potential. Tehran insists... wrongdoing by U.S. Marines and the killings of civilians in Haditha, Iraq, there will be punishment. The New York Times is reporting that the investigation does conclude that 24 civilians were killed in an unprovoked attack by the Marines, who have claimed that the Iraqis were victims of a roadside bomb. In Iraq today, a car bomb hit a police patrol in Mosul, wounding 19, including five policemen. And in Basra, the Iraqi prime minister has declared a one-month state of emergency because of a power struggle among Shiite factions. East Timor's rebel leader has rejected an agreement designed to end days of violence in that island nation and also demanded the resignation of the country's embattled prime minister. Meanwhile, more than 2,000 foreign troops have arrived to help stop the violence, which has caused more than 100,000 people to leave the capital city. In Afghanistan, the parliament wants the government to prosecute the U.S. soldiers responsible for a deadly road crash earlier this week that triggered the worst riots in Kabul since 2001. The U.S. military says the crash was an accident. Dutch investigators have cleared Lance Armstrong of doping in the 1999 Tour de France and accused anti-doping authorities of misconduct in that case. The FBI says it's not giving up its search for the people responsible for the disappearance of Teamsters leader Jimmy Hoffa, even though its latest effort, a two-week dig at a horse farm near Detroit, produced little more than buried trash. In Indonesia, U.S. Marines have joined an international effort to deliver aid and medical care to nearly 650,000 people displaced by last weekend's devastating earthquake. The U.S. has also increased its aid contribution to $5 million. The U.S. and Vietnam have signed a trade pact that removes one of the last major hurdles in Hanoi's bid to join the World Trade Organization. A U.N. tribunal has concluded that former Yugoslav President Slobodan Milosevic died of natural causes, not poisoning. He died in detention in March, months before the expected conclusion of his marathon war crimes tribunal. And it's now official. An independence vote by Montenegrins to break away from Serbia has been verified. This is Quality News Network. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Costco, the nation's biggest warehouse retailer, says its third quarter profit rose 12.3%, aided by higher sales and membership fees. For the quarter ended on May 7th, the company reports net income of $235.6 million. Tiffany, the jewelry and luxury goods retailer, reports its first quarter earnings grew by 7.7%. Broadband equipment maker ADC Telecommunications is buying communications equipment maker Andrew Corporation for about $2 billion in a stock swap that will create a company with $3.3 billion in annual sales. Disney is announcing that it will soon be selling its films via computer download from an internet-based movie site called Cinema Now. Consumers will be able to transfer the films to a portable device running Windows Media Software, but the movies will not be able to be played on a standalone DVD player. The Attorney General and the FBI Director have asked the nation's leading internet service companies to keep a variety of customer information and other data for 2 years, much longer than they do now. The government says it may need the records to fight child pornography and terrorism, but the online industry is expected to strongly oppose such a request because of privacy concerns for their customers. And the Senate Finance Committee expected to act swiftly in approving the nomination of Goldman Sachs CEO Henry Paulson as the next Secretary of the Treasury. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $70.30 a barrel. The Dow is up 41. NASDAQ is up 10 points. And the S&P 500 is up by 6. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you to everybody for tuning in to the Guy James Show this afternoon. So very glad to have all of you along with us today. I'm feeling, as I mentioned on a couple of posts I put on different websites, feeling a bit frisky today, as you could probably tell. I'm pissed. I don't mind telling you. The more I watch it on TV, the more pissed I get. I don't know what I'm going to do. I think after the show, I'm going to have to go out and go for a long walk and walk some of this off, because I've had it. So, because of that, I'm going to start out this hour of the program with a little levity, if you don't mind. Somebody sent me an email. Let me see here. No, yeah, they sent it in an email. I don't know who it's from. And it's from a website called Humor Online. And I want you to know, whoever sent this, I think it's just as cute as can be. But send the kids out of the room. The kids don't listen to this show. Never mind. Here it is. It's called A Love Story. I will seek and find you. I shall take you to bed and have my way with you. I will make you moan and groan. I will make you beg for mercy, beg for me to stop. I will exhaust you to the point that you will be relieved when I'm finished with you. And when I'm finished, you will be weak for days. All my love, the flu. I love it. I just love it. That's the kind of thing I think is funny. Anyway, that's funny. A little levity to start off the. And also, my good friend Jane Stillwater had a good article in opednews.com. And Jane is, as some of you may know, and if you don't know Jane Stillwater, we correspond from time to time. I'd love to meet her sometime. I believe Jane lives in California. I'm pretty sure she does. She's an activist, and she's a great writer, and she writes for opednews.com. That's opednews.com. And she sends out a newsletter, and I get it, and we comment once in a while back and forth. I just enjoy her style. This from our good friend Jane Stillwater. My friend Leona told me that she thought she saw Jimmy Hoffa in Michigan recently. Maybe he's still alive. It could happen. Maybe the feds put him in a witness protection program. I bet that's what's going to finally happen to George W. Bush. The peanut gallery is starting to laugh here. We will get a tastefully sorrowful announcement on CNN that America's 42nd president has quietly passed away in his sleep. Then this sad event will be followed by a fancy state funeral. And then they will quietly whisk our George off to play gin rummy with Osama bin Laden in Dubai. You think I'm joking? I'm not. I bet you anything that when the special prosecutors start fitting GWB for an orange jumpsuit, he's going to wimp out, pull out some wax dummy lookalike, and get buried in Arlington, and then join a witness protection program overseen by Alberto Gonzalez. George, I understand. When Americans finally wake up and discover the millions of ways that you have screwed them, play Drop the Soap with Jeff Skillings and Kenny Boy Lay is going to be one of the milder options available to you. What are some others? Death Row comes to mind, or being run out of town on a rail? Tar and feathering? Hey, I'm nonviolent and I would hate to see you get lynched. I just have one favor to ask, Mr. Gonzalez. Please don't put Bush in a witness protection program in California. Send him to Texas. Thank you, Jane. Ah, yes, she's got a way. She can write. She can write very, very serious, and she can throw in some humor too. And I've always admired her writing ever since we started this program some almost 4 years ago. And before I get on with talking about Jonah Goldberg, man, I need to wash out my mouth with soap sometime after I speak some of these names. Did you see? This is another FU from Dick Cheney. Did you see that Vice President Dick Cheney again refused to report his office's activities and either the classification or declassification of documents during 2005, and he's refused to do that ever since 2003? Here's the interesting part of this. Despite an executive order signed by President Bush in 2003, requiring, and here's what it says, all agencies or any other entity within the executive branch that comes into the possession of classified information, end quote, to report on its activities, the vice president's office maintains that it has no legal obligation to report on its classification decisions. Despite the executive order signed by Bush. Now, his boss signed this order, and Bush is, and Cheney is refusing to obey it. Cheney's office told the Tribune in an April report on the administration's propensity for secrecy that it is under no obligation to report this information. The vice president said his office is not an agency, although the executive order said agency or, quote, any other entity within the executive branch. The vice president says his office is not an agency and that the vice president is unique in having both an executive role and legislative role since he is the president of the Senate. But monitors of government secrecy say the vice president is flaunting his own president's authority in this matter. It undermines oversight of the classification system and reveals a disdain for presidential authority, said Stephen Aftergood, director of the Project on Government Secrecy at the Federation of American Scientists. It's part of a larger picture of disrespect that this vice president has shown for the norms of oversight and accountability. A spokesman for Cheney asked for a response, reiterated the vice president's stance on the issue. This has been thoroughly reviewed, and it's been determined that the reporting requirement does not apply. Well, well, well. Seems like everybody over there is above the law. Even, you know, president tell you one thing, and the vice president says, hey, Bush signed that. I don't give a damn. Why, Junior Bush? Peh. Never mind. I'm not doing it. Well, I promised you I was going to talk about this op-ed that Jonah Goldberg wrote. And I know you all know who this little wimpy bastard is. And in Washington, it's not good enough that we've got political whores like Ann Coulter and Linda Tripp and Lucianne Goldberg pandering to the seemingly insatiable, salacious appetites of the right-wing nut jobs. Oh, no. Now we're having to contend with their similarly slimy spawn. Now, I know of no offspring that Linda Tripp has in the media, and certainly there is no way Ann Coulter would ever be impregnated by any other means than artificial insemination, because certainly no man could ever stand to be in her presence long enough to do the necessary deed. But I'm sure that even the artificial method hadn't taken place yet, for I really doubt there's any room in Ann the Man Coulter's life for anything other than her own self-loathing. So that leaves us with the offspring of Lucienne Goldberg. You know who I'm talking about? I'm sure many of you do. Yep, nice little Jonah Goldberg is one of the darlings of the right-wing press. Don't ask me how this happened, because after reading a dozen or so of his columns, I cannot, for the life of me, understand why any newspaper would ever print any of his usually unsubstantiated drivel. Our local newspaper here in Fort Myers had his column in, and that's what caused me to talk about him today. Let's just take his latest attempt at yet another Al Gore smear. I read it, and right off, I recognized that poor young Jonah had done it again. He once again presented as facts to the American public a column so riddled with inaccuracies and mistakes, so as enough to make any newspaper editor say, "Never again, boy." I think Jonah has a stash of the year 2000 campaign smears by the right-wing press, and then he dug them out, and lo, these nearly 6 years later, because he, along with many of the neocons he services, and you can take the servicing part any way you want, since Jonah has been rumored to have been seen in the company of Jeff Gannon, but Jonah and his neocon pals have evidently realized that Al Gore just might be thinking of tossing his hat into the ring for 2008. Not only is he thinking about running, but in my opinion, he is, at this point, the odds-on favorite to beat any Republican candidate that they can come up with. It's Gore's destiny. It's karma. It would be beautiful, delicious justice, in my opinion. These past few weeks, the press has been mighty kind to Al Gore. So kind, in fact, that one almost thinks they're setting a trap of some kind for him. You do have to wonder how the American press, who treated Al Gore as if he was some kind of a pariah in 2000, could turn on a dime and be so nice to him. You really do have to wonder that. Every news outlet known to man savaged Al Gore in 2000. I have never understood exactly why. I can understand Fox, the Washington Times, the Wall Street Journal, and a few others going after him, but damn it, it seemed to me that every possible news source in print, on TV, and on the radio was totally against Al Gore in almost every way possible. And for some reason I've never found out, the press just seemed to hate Al Gore's guts. If they weren't putting out stories about Gore from right-wing sources, they'd just make things up. The crap about him inventing the internet, for example, you've all heard that. For whatever reason, the Washington Press Corps really disliked Gore and never missed an opportunity to ridicule him. And they did. They went so far as to make things up about Al Gore, and the most famous of their lies was that Gore was a serial exaggerator and had said that he had invented the internet. That was a goddamn lie. And everyone that printed it or mentioned it knew it was. But it never stopped a single one of them from passing it on to the public at every opportunity. Invented the internet? Tell me how you get invented the internet from this statement. He was being interviewed by Wolf Blitzer. And this is where the famous invented the internet right-wing story came from. And I quote, "During my service in the United States Congress, I took the initiative in creating the Internet," Gore said. "I took the initiative in moving forward a whole range of initiatives that have proven to be important to our nation's economic growth, environmental protection, and improvements in our educational system." And you know what? When Wolf Blitzer asked Gore that question and Al answered it, Blitzer never questioned his answer. In fact, no one from the press questioned it. There was no discussion about Gore's statement taking the initiative on the Internet until the right-wing operative started passing it around Washington as a big exaggeration by Al Gore. The fact is that Blitzer and the press didn't treat it as any kind of news-making story because it was exactly true that Gore had, in fact, taken the leadership in Congress in creating what we now know as the Internet. That is a fact that cannot be denied. And then there's this huge lie from the right that Al Gore was a serial liar because he claimed that he was the inspiration for the movie Love Story. Another gross exaggeration by the slime balls on the right. Here's what actually happened. The Love Story nonsense began in late 1997, invented by a Marine Dowd column. You all know who Mo Dowd is. And in the aftermath of that piece, Melinda Henneberger wrote a lengthy story on the topic for the Sunday New York Times in December of 97. No one has ever disputed the facts she reported. Pundits have simply preferred to ignore them. But what Henneberger reported nearly 9 years ago contradicts both the things Conley still says. First question, did Gore inspire Love Story? As part of her research, Henneberger interviewed Eric Siegel, who had known Gore at Harvard while writing Love Story. And sorry, folks, we hate to upset you, but here's Henneberger on what Eric Siegel, the writer of Love Story, told her. Henneberger. "The character of the preppy Harvard hockey player Oliver Barrett IV was modeled on both Mr. Gore and his college roommate, the actor Tommy Lee Jones. According to Eric Siegel, Jones had been the model for the macho athlete with the heart of a poet, part of the character, and Gore had been the model for the young college student with a highly accomplished father to live up to. So Al Gore had been a model for the part." You know, pundits who like to parse words will doubtless note that none of this means that Gore inspired Love Story, but it also became crystal clear in Henneberger's piece that Gore had made no such claim, ever. Gore's meaningless remarks about Love Story had been made on a long, late-night plane ride in a conversation with two respected reporters, Rick Burke of the New York Times and Karen Tumulty from Times. Henneberger interviewed both reporters. And sorry, folks, we hate to disappoint you again, but here's Tumulty's account of what Gore said. Henneberger, "Gore said Siegel had told some reporters in Tennessee that it was based on him and Tipper." Henneberger said this. Ms. Tumulty said, "He said, all I know is that that's what he told reporters in Tennessee." Burke agreed that Gore attributed the story to reporters in Tennessee. Gore had never himself said that. And sure enough, Siegel confirmed that there had been such a story in the Nashville Tennessean. Siegel told Henneberger that a reporter just exaggerated a bit. Mind you, I said a reporter just exaggerated a bit, playing the local hero angle. For example, Siegel said the reporter added Tipper Gore into the mix, though she had not been a model for Love Story, other lead character in the tale, Jenny Cavalieri. Amazing, huh? These were two stories that were bandied about in that election. You heard them every single day, that Al Gore was a serial liar, a serial exaggerator. He claimed he inspired Love Story. He claimed he invented the Internet. When I have just just read to you incontrovertible facts from the people who did these interviews that say otherwise. Even today, amidst unusually positive press coverage of Gore, these narratives lurk in the background, and they're ready to bring him out again should Al Gore decide to throw his hat back in the ring. And you know what? People on the right will suck them up again from Rush the drug junkie and Hannity and any other Republican smear master who wants to repeat these lies, because they're still out there. But back to Jonah Goldberg. His column this week is about as much of a joke as anyone could print in a newspaper, and it just confounds me as to why editors all over the country didn't just call Goldberg up and tell him that if he's going to continue to write juvenile crap like this, to send it to his mommy and maybe she could use it for her gossip rag instead. She's always looking for a good story, and if you don't believe that, just ask Monica Lewinsky. So Jonah took issue with something Al Gore supposedly told Arianna Huffington at the Cannes Film Festival premiere of his new movie. This happened recently. And here's the quote from Al Gore. "The first was when I was 15 years old and came here for the summer to study the existentialist, Sartre and Camus. We were not allowed to speak anything but French," end quote. Jonah then tells us that it would have been impossible for that story to be true, since Al Gore had also claimed that he had spent that summer on the family farm. Jonah also felt compelled to point out that Gore got C's in French in school. Goldberg's point in writing this crap? That Al Gore was once again lying to the public. Here we go again. Problem is, though, Jonah didn't even do any research on this point, and to no one's surprise, it turns out that Lucianne's little love child was full of it again. As it turns out, Al Gore spent part of that summer in France and another part working on his dad's farm. Sorry, Jonah, it just didn't work out. So who's the liar here? Of course, you, Jonah, can claim that you're not a liar but are just mistaken. And by gosh, what do you know? You've already printed a retraction that doubtless no one will see. The lie will live on. Yes, when confronted with facts, Jonah had to say, well, maybe I was wrong, but Gore did exaggerate how long he spent in France that summer. Quick now, any of you old enough, tell me how long you spent doing what in the summer 45 years ago? Will you get it exactly right? I highly doubt it. Hell, I thought I was a high school basketball star until I looked up my record recently. and it seems my memory was just a bit off kilter when it came to how many points I scored. Seems like the total grew by a few over the years. Not a lot now, but a few. Now, why didn't I have that exactly right when it was only 45 years ago? Damn. What a liar I must be. And maybe, just maybe, Jonah, Al didn't want to bore an audience by saying, now, 45 years ago, I spent 2 weeks and 3 days in France and 5 weeks and 4 days plowing on my dad's farm, and oh, I forgot the 5 days I was goofing off. Maybe, dear Jonah, Al just didn't think that information was all that important, and I got news for you, oh, exalted son of the queen of gossip and dirty political trips. It wasn't that important, and who the hell would want to hear it? Nobody I know. Gore was simply mentioning that he'd been to Cannes before, and I'm pretty damn sure no one gives a hoot just for how long he was there and when. I know I don't. So I think Jonah's reasoning for this smear piece is pretty damn clear. He's cranking up the right-wing smear machine to try and take Gore out early. He thinks this little reminder of the right-wing lies concerning Gore will make them look at him as a serial exaggerator once again. I'll tell you what, they won't get away with it this time if I have to stand on street corners and yell out the truth. Nice little Jonah was planting a seed here, a seed for the right-wing garden of hate, a seed they will water and they will nourish and they will help it grow into a full-blown Republican lie once again. And Jonah Goldberg, even if he is only the punk son of that horrible bitch, Lucy Ann Goldberg, knows the game well. He wrote the following 2 years ago in a post on at the corner. These are his words. Candidates only get one theme ascribed to them. For Gore, it was, quote, he exaggerates and lies to make himself look good or something like that. It wasn't always fair, but it was no more unfair than the Bush is stupid and ignorant theme. So Jonah does know the truth about Al Gore. He knows the rap on Al Gore isn't fair or accurate. But that didn't stop him from writing a nationally syndicated column filled with lies I've proven once again to be totally untrue. No, it didn't stop him at all. And so here we go again. It started. They started on Hillary the day after Junior took office the last time. I remember the drug junkie talking about it that very day. Well, this time, it's going to be different. They have us to contend with this time. We will not allow it to happen to the Democratic candidate again. This will not stand. We will not allow it. Just because one Goldberg whore scored big with her lies doesn't mean the other one's going to get away with it, too. Remember that. Remember that when you read anything written by this little twerp, Jonah Goldberg, please. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I don't know how anybody could have your grasp of what these guys are all about and not be just driven by total rage. They are so deceitful, so disgusting, so ugly. It's just...
They're every bit of that.
Oh, you know, it really... To understand what they're about is to just feel utter contempt for them.
Yep, it sure is.
And it comes through. You're there. You know what they're about, and you make it known. And, they're going to do their swift boat act. They're going to do it again, and there's going to be some damn fools in this country that are going to believe it.
Oh, sure. And, you know, people are questioning, why is Al Gore, or why is John Kerry, I'm making one Freudian slip after another today. Why is John Kerry defending the swift boat story again already? Because he knows. He knows. It's coming.
John Kerry is defending the swift boat. Sorry, what are you saying?
Yeah, his side of it.
Oh,
he's coming out already and talking about it, saying that what they said was a bunch of lies, something he should have done a long time ago.
Oh, of course.
But people are questioning why he's doing that now. He's doing it now because he knows it's coming again. He knows it is.
Yeah, I think he fully intends to run again. But like you, I value the man immensely. But his giving up so easily, knowing that election was rigged, he had to.
Data.
You can forgive that. I can't.
Data had to pry my fingers off. I tell you what, I couldn't have taken it that easy. I really couldn't.
We always sending him messages. You are not conceding just for yourself, sir. You are conceding for me and the rest of this country. Don't do it, but didn't want to look like a bad loser. Didn't want Rush saying unkind things about him. That was terrible. I don't think that can be forgotten. It should be Gore or Feingold. Edwards is a good man, too. Maybe Boxer. There's some good people out there.
We've got a lot of good people in the party. Somebody will float to the top. I hope it's somebody that will take a stand on the war. First of all, and foremost for me, that's the most important thing. I want one of them to stand up. I'm becoming more disenchanted with Hillary Clinton every single day. I think if she's going to be a credible candidate for president of the United States, and I know some of my Democratic friends are going to hate it that I say this, but I think if she's going to be any kind of a credible candidate whatsoever, she's going to have to stand up and say, I do not approve of this war, and I believe that we need to get out. She's going to have to say it.
She's got the same people advising her that advised Kerry. They're saying, you've got the left tied up. There's nothing that could make them vote Republican. So go out and try to appeal to the Republicans. And she loses all of her integrity.
Yeah.
I would, she'd have to be a hell of a lot better president than what we've got. But, and the other thing is, as long as the cons are controlling these machines, the odds are they're going to select our candidate for us too.
Absolutely. You know, we're both both sides are working for that undeclared middle, and that's a small slice. And as long as that margin is going to stay within that margin of error, they've got a chance with those machines in every single election.
Yes, because of some districts I'd learned of that had only 200 to 250 registered voters that delivered over 10,000 votes for Bush. And everybody said, well, clearly that's the basis for a recount. And no, what's to be recounted? There's no records there to be recounted. There is no records. That's the way we designed the thing, you know?
Sure. Sure. Well, we're going to have to come up with something really good. That we win this by more than a few votes. We're going to have to make it so that the exit polls are so ridiculous that they, you know. Of course, I don't know that. I don't think that'd keep them from trying it. I mean, we could probably win 70-30, and they'd probably still try it. You know.
That's right. They fully will try it. They can't afford not to because, I mean, there are people, if they get in office now, that will hold them accountable.
And after all, you're right, Dave, and after all, what have they got to lose by doing it?
The exit poll showing that the Democrats won 70-30 and the GOP got 30-70 against them, and Rush Limbaugh is going to say, get over it. It was an honest election, and that's
right. You're absolutely right. That's exactly how it'll come down.
Yeah. Well, Guy, I don't want to cause you any more frustration than that, but boy, I wish we could get... We're trying to get injunctions in every city, every state that we can, outlawing these machines, but it won't be in time.
No. It's an enormous task, and as you found out, they've got their tentacles everywhere. They laid down the foundation for this such a long time ago and have such a network set up with these voting machines that it's going to take a long time to root this out. It really
is. The world can't wait. The world cannot wait. The amount of harm that they are heaping on us day after day, the world cannot wait.
Well, that's an absolute certainty.
I love what you do. You're making more and more people aware every time, I think. I hear people calling in that you made them see the light.
Well, we get a lot of email to that effect, and I'm happy the way things are going, and we're going to continue on with what we consider to be a mission here, and with your help and all the listeners' help, we'll get the job done, Dave. We will.
Well, we try. You know, there must be a lot of people that are just so embarrassed to say, oh, I can't believe that I have been supporting this all along.
There are.
What a fool I have been.
Absolutely.
You know, just don't want to admit it.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for your call, Dave.
And thank you for being there, Guy.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. Ah, yes. My, oh, my. Hey, I think it's, let me see here. What was I going to do? I know what I was going to do. I'm going to run a couple of spots for some great guys, and don't you go anywhere.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh,
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Yes, sirree, we're back with the, last 20 minutes or so of the Guy James Show. Thank you. Thank you so much for being along with us this afternoon. We do appreciate your listenership. And we do appreciate it also. A lot of you folks have been kind enough to donate to the program. It is a listener-supported program, and we hope that you will donate to the program and help help keep it going. It takes a dollar or two to do that every month, so I hope you will keep that in mind. Do keep in mind that yours truly does not draw salary or pay or anything of the sort. In fact, it goes the other way. So keep that in mind and do help out with the program. I do see that our Secretary of State is now saying, I wasn't sure if I read it right when I first saw it today, that I think maybe they might talk to Iran. Gee, can this be? Wow, I really have to wonder about that. Talk to Iran? This government of ours? My, would this not be an unusual situation? Very definitely. For those of you who are doubting, have any doubts about the Haditha tragedy that took place in Iraq almost six months ago now? Did you know that there have been reparations paid to the families over there already? I was surprised to find that out. I thought the government and our government would stonewall them, but evidently we know it's true, have known it's true for a long time now, and paid reparations to those families. I caution you that if you have a weak stomach, or if you're terribly emotional, stay away from the details of that story. Do stay away from the details of that story. They're too. On the one hand, everybody in America, just as, I won't say what I was going to say, but everybody in America should probably have to watch it. That might be a good thing. Maybe every single American should have to watch the gory details of the aftermath of that slaughter. Maybe every American should have to watch the interviews with the children who hid under the bed while their families were slaughtered and hear them tell their stories. Maybe that'd be a good thing. Maybe it would. But you know, the sad part is there are people in this country that could watch that and be like water off a duck's back and say, so what? So what? They're camel jockeys. They're Arabs. What do we care? There are plenty of people in this country that have a mindset like that. They are part of the 29. Most definitely part of the 29. Anybody who wants to claim that racism doesn't play a part in the minds of the 29, you're badly mistaken. Badly mistaken. There are so many people in this country that feel that, you know, and you can hearken back to another time, another era, to one of the most awful times in human history, when a nation of people thought they were better than anybody else. They thought their skin was whiter than anybody else and therefore better. That everybody outside of their nation was the lesser. And if you didn't look a certain way, have a certain color of hair, certain color of eyes, that you were inferior. Don't you ever kid yourself that that attitude is well represented in the 29. And when I talk about the 29, you know who I'm talking about. We're talking about those 29 who are still hanging on, still hanging on. I'm interested to see what's going to happen here in the next few days when the rest of the awful truth comes out about the massacre in Haditha. Let's be fair about this. I am always fair in this program. George Bush wasn't there. He didn't order that done. He didn't stand there and tell them to tell those soldiers to go in those homes and slaughter those people. No, he didn't do that. But he might as well have. Because had it not been for his illegal, immoral act of ordering this war in the first place, those soldiers would not have been there. Those families would have been living their lives. I understand they took the Koran out of the hands of a 75-year-old man with one leg and shot him in the back of the head while his grandchildren watched. I understand they threw grenades into the kitchen of one of the homes, and the neighbors heard the little girls that were in that kitchen screaming as they died. Man's inhumanity to man. Americans are capable of it as well. That's something we never wanted to admit to one another for so long. We thought that, oh, there's an aberration now and then. There's one person out of a million that might act that way in America. Sure, there were plenty of them in Nazi Germany, and there were plenty of them in Stalin's Russia that thought nothing of slaughtering people. But not here in this country. But this wouldn't have happened. This wouldn't have happened if people weren't pushed beyond the breaking point. If they never had not been pushed beyond human endurance, if some of them hadn't been there for the second, third, and fourth tour, wouldn't have happened with good leadership. Wouldn't happen when company commanders see a guy gone off the deep end, maybe sending him home, but knowing they're not allowed to send him home just because he got a little psychological problem. No. And of course, the soldiers are encouraged not to show their post-traumatic stress disorder. You're not a real man if you show that. You don't want to go to the company commander and tell him that. You don't want your buddies to know that you got to go home because of psychological problems. That's the mindset. That's how it is. Sad but true. You know, every week, I get many, many nasty emails. Fewer all the time, I must say that. They're, I guess, in a way, thankfully, starting to hide under their rocks. But I get emails from the right-wing extremists who claim that we on the left are the angry ones. Let me say right off that, yes, indeed, I am angry. And it's my position that if you're not angry about the direction this country is headed right now, you are not a patriotic American. That if you're not angry at the direction we have taken, you're not a patriotic American at all. If you're happy at the stead, if you're happy at the way things are going in this country at this moment, don't tell me you are a patriotic American, because you are not. Oh, you can be happy with yourself. You can be happy with your life. You can be happy with your kids and your job and all that sort of thing. That's not what I'm talking about. If you're happy about the direction this country has taken on the world stage, if you're happy about the war in Iraq, and you think we ought to be there, you're not a patriotic American. It's very apparent that this nation has been conquered. Not by some outside force, not by some bin Laden or people like that. No, it's been conquered from within. Our country's been captured by those who traffic in hatred and fear and bigotry, and it's been taken over by the war profiteers and the rich and the greedy. Hardly what the founders of this great nation envisioned. Because, you see, they really did see a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, but this current administration has long since forgotten those grand and glorious words, if they ever knew them in the first place. And I admit that at times I've had feelings of utter hopelessness, but upon further reflection, and it's something we have to do every day nowadays, I pull back from that despair, and I remember the past. As fortunately, I am a student of history. The good and the glorious past of what we, the Democratic Party, the liberals, the progressives, what we've stood for, and what we've accomplished over the life of this United States of America. You see, we have history on our side. For we're the ones who have led this nation through progress. It is we who are the inheritors of the proud past, and it's we who have forever engraved the best and brightest moments into American history. We've always been at the forefront of the struggle for what's right and good for this land we love. Always. Always been there. First, we've been there. And oh yes, the right-wing extremists can claim to be the real American, but it is we who are the keepers of freedom. It's we that have kept that light of Lady Liberty lit. The extremists constantly wrap themselves in the flag, and it's always been we who have fought for the freedoms that flag really represents. It doesn't represent military might and conquering other countries. It's not what it represents at all. It's they who have twisted the Constitution, but it's we that made it straight again. And we've seen these dark moments before in this nation. There's no doubt about it. There's no reason to feel special right now. Vietnam. Look how long that went on. Look what a tragic, awful situation that was. Look what a great divide it brought to the country. Will anybody ever forget the picture of the girl kneeling at Kent State? Will anybody ever forget the picture of that little naked Vietnamese girl running with napalm on her back, on fire? We come to these times before. Martin Luther King knew what it was about. The slaves in the cotton fields knew what it was about. The burning crosses and the hanging trees of the Ku Klux Klan. The misery of the Great Depression. The fight for equal rights for women. The Nazis. Joe McCarthy. We've conquered all of those blights upon this nation. We've still got some work to do on some of them. Most certainly we do. We've still got plenty of work to do on civil rights. But we've worked hard on all those things. And we've never wavered. And we've never surrendered. And we never will. But I just want you to remember, my friends, my liberal progressive friends, that we've been the one to overcome these obstacles. It's we who've shared the vision and faith of great men and women. The Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, Rosa Parks, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, John Kennedy, and scores of others. We're the conscience of this nation. For we're the ones who pull her back from the confusion, from the abyss, time after time. And we're at one of those moments right now. One of those horrible moments in American history. We recognize what's right and what's good for our country. For our party, our side of the aisle, have always been the thinkers and the visionaries, real believers in the good in mankind. So my message in all of this is that we really should never allow ourselves to sink too low with despair over this current event that we're going through right now once again. And because we know, and we do know, that eventually we'll triumph over this group of extremists who have temporarily hijacked this country. We know that because history's on our side. There have been tyrants throughout history. There have been despots throughout history. There have been dictators. There have been evildoers throughout history. And man usually overcomes them. In one way or another, even around the globe in other places, are usually overcome. You look at probably considered the worst, most awful man in history. Most people would say is Hitler. I'm not so sure Stalin doesn't deserve first place, but most people would say it was Hitler. And look what's happened to the German nation. Look at where they're at today. They've overcome that. The Russians have overcome Stalin. Cambodians are working on overcoming the horror that was Pol Pot and the Idi Amins and the Saddam Husseins, and the list goes on and on and on. There will always be those kind of men on this planet. It's just up to those those of us with a conscience to keep them from coming to power anymore. And we've got an administration in this country right now that arguably, I don't want to compare to some of those people I've mentioned, but they've been very, very bad for America in a lot of different ways. And a lot of different ways they've been very bad for not only American, but for people in other countries as well. Most certainly they've been pretty doggone bad for the good people of Iraq. And I know the people on the right even resent me saying the good people of Iraq. After all, that was a sovereign nation. And they had a leader that we didn't like. And they had a leader that was a pretty bad guy. But let me tell you one thing. As bad a guy as they had in there, they didn't have things as bad as they have them right now. They have suffered, and they have suffered mightily at the hand of the United States government. A government that was elected by the people of this country. So we got to be more careful. We not only have to think about ourselves, but in this small world we live in, we've got to think about the rest of the countries in the world and what might happen to them. We can no longer think just within the borders of our own country, because we are a world leader, whether we like it or not. For the time being, we are anyway. We won't be if we allow this type of government to continue. We will sink to the depths. We will follow some other countries that have gone to ruin if we continue to have governments like we have right now. But we will overcome it. We always have. We always will. I have faith, and I know you do too. I am very thankful for having all of you with us on the program today. It's been one of those days we've kind of been in a mood. Couldn't help it. That's just the way it is. what you see is what you get on this program, but you don't see it. What you hear is what you get. I'm always brutally honest with you, whether you like it or appreciate it or not. That's what you get from me. And it's my pledge that that's what you will always get. That's about all we have today. I do so appreciate you listening to the program today, and I appreciate your emails and correspondence, and I hope you'll continue that practice. And any of you listening for the first time today, please send us an email. Let us know what mode you listen to the program in, whether it be iPod or archive or listening live. We'd like to know that, and also like to know where the heck you are. We keep track of that, you know. American government is not the only group that finds out where you're at. We're watching you too, just in a different way. Hey, thanks for listening. Been great to have you along today. And as we always say on this program, and we mean it, you've heard from the radical right now. All that's left is the truth. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.